COVID test.
That was a good one.
All right. Welcome to the Mobility Podcast. I am your co-host, Pete Gould, with Catapult Policy Strategies, and I am joined by my very long-haired co-host,
Greg Rogers from Twitter, at AVGregR.
And I'm Greg Rodriguez, former attorney, but views are still our own.
Anyway, so thank you guys all for rejoining us. We, as many of you did too, we spent the last 2 weeks hitting refresh and jacking up our screen time and watching TV. So we are excited to be back and talking policy. This is going to be just the three of us, which is the first time in a long time. And we are going to kind of go over real quick, just, you know, not so much the election results per se, we'll touch on that, but more importantly, what might that mean for transportation and mobility policy the remainder of this year and going forward. And so, you know, I think with that, we will state the obvious that we are going to be having a Biden-Harris administration beginning in the end of January next year. That was less shocking. What some people were, you know, a little bit more surprised on was that in Congress, there was not the Democratic wave of any means, and actually Republicans gained seats in the House. And so what we're looking at, once again, is going to be a divided government. And I think that's going to have a lot of major impacts for policy and transportation and real life on the ground, you know, not just theoretical stuff. So I guess we can start with that. You know, right now the Senate is for now likely to be in Republican hands. There are two Senate runoffs in Georgia. If the Democrats win both, they would then be able to take the Senate, which makes planning for next Congress very easy for anyone else who's in their mind. But let's kind of so we'll pretend, and again, not to prejudge an election. But just let's, you know, in this context, we're going to assume that there's a Senate Republican Senate. Greg, what are you seeing? Greg Rodriguez or Greg Rogers? Let's talk. One of the big impacts that's likely to have in this lame duck is there's been a lot of talk leading into this about how badly transit agencies are hurting, cities, state governments, state DOTs and the like, who have all just, you know, as with everybody, just been hammered from a budget standpoint this year. They had been hoping, and the House had passed the HEROES Act in what, May, that provided significant.
That's about 7 years ago. Yeah.
May of 1802. and, you know, that had the money. And obviously that bill was, let's be honest, that was a negotiating bill as well. You know, I don't this issue for whatever reason has become partisan, and so it does not look like that the kind of cavalry is coming for the transit industry. That I'd love to get your guys' thoughts. I mean, that's going to have really very negative impacts, not just immediately, but over the next, you know, years, decade.
Yeah, I have two words to summarize. I mean, it's bad. And it's only going to get worse. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, trans agencies are going to struggle, and we have to make sure, that we are supporting, multimodal transportation as I'm sure we're going to get into in this episode. That should be a core priority nationally. And it should also be, and not, you know, this is a matter of the health of the economies, in our urban cores. This is a matter of achieving significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. And this is a matter of also equity. Providing people with affordable transit is a core thing that we have to be focused on. And so, you know, I think we can all hope that something will get done in the near future. I don't know. I've been hurt before.
It's for whatever reason, it has been dubbed kind of the blue state bailout, which, as we're seeing with all things COVID, this virus could not care less who you voted for or your neighbors or anything. So, you know, cities and state and local governments across the board understandably are being hit. And actually, I think, sadly, one of the only the only hopes that this type of funding might have is that what we're actually seeing right now are in some localities. I want to say El Paso in particular. This was raised, was their cities and or governors are unable to make the difficult but absolutely necessary public health decisions, because without any backstop and without any funding, from the feds, the feds are the only one who can print money at this point. The economic impact would be just as bad as the cause. And so as a result, you're kind of keeping bars and gyms open till 10 p.m. and then closing. And it's not getting the job done. So, if things continue to spike at some point, Republican mayors and Republican governors too are going to weigh in as well. But let's just, I do just for the long-term, immediate and long-term, functionality, but also, kind of survival of transit industry. I think a very important short-term immediate issue.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I mean, all that being said, I'm wondering if this new administration will be able to reframe the conversation around transportation. Because I do think, trying to think of some bright sides of COVID-19, which is very difficult. But I think Greg Rogers, you hit on, the word equity, making sure that nobody's left behind. These are all things we were talking about pre-COVID, especially under the Obama administration. So I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to re-energize those conversations and use COVID as an opportunity to rethink how we move both people and freight, especially considering that, working from home is likely going to be more accepted. And so if we have less commuting, is there an opportunity to just rethink how we move? And that's what I'm very curious to see, if that can come to fruition once we have a new administration in place and things, we start talking about things like infrastructure bills or surface transportation bills.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been really exciting to see the boom in active transportation and people buying bikes. The fact that there was a bike shortage in the U.S. is awesome. I could not be more stoked about that. And also, I was looking through the Biden transition team's platform. There are four categories for their priorities during the transition. COVID-19, economic recovery, climate change, and equity, all of which, really tie in here. And something that really stood out to me was in the climate change section was that, they talk about the need to rebuild our infrastructure, creating millions of good paying jobs. I talk about creating new auto industry jobs, 1 million auto industry jobs, and ensuring that American auto workers, manufacturers can win the 21st century, as well as for transit, providing every American city with 100,000 or more residents with high quality, zero emissions public transportation options through flexible federal investments. The end of that paragraph says also we should be installing infrastructure for pedestrians and cyclists. I love that. Let's have that focus as well. Our recovery should include and must include active transportation options, as well as supporting our public transit services. Look, we are headed into highway hell if we do not figure out how to avoid having a flood of single occupancy vehicles coming back in. And yeah, hopefully we do see, the continued growth of telecommuting. Hopefully people do choose to do so. And hopefully people do choose to go back to using transit once we get this thing under control. It's an imperative.
I think, and that's a really good way to frame this conversation. And I'm wondering we started off talking about a stimulus bill and our concerns that a new one won't get passed. And it's kind of, a question of why can't we get a new one passed? And why can't we get momentum behind transit? And pardon the dog, but it's kind of the COVID realities these days. I think the mailman's here.
I was like, pardon the dog. That's a new saying.
Yeah. I mean,
literally
just
my dog.
Yeah.
Dogs are always welcome on the mobility podcast.
He's barking. Yeah. He's quieter than the baby right now. So that says a lot for
2020.
The household.
It's 2020. There.
Exactly. Why can't we get that momentum behind transit? And why can't we get that momentum for funding to help cities navigate the crisis that we're facing around COVID-19? And I mean, I would contend, again, thinking about opportunities is, and it's a challenge, I think, to all of us, is how do we really reframe the conversation around the value of transportation? And can the Biden administration put the right message out there to put pressure on both sides to vote yes on something that does bail out transit, make sure that transit continues to survive as we come out of COVID-19? Because, I mean, you think about here in D.C., you know, finally we have, corridors, 16th Street corridor is finally going to get a bus-only lane. Like, yeah. That is going to be fantastic. And to your point, Greg, I mean, based on the amount of new cars that you see registered, new and used, the auto industry is booming right now, which is great, but it's because people are buying cars. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a congestion nightmare, and that will drive people back to transit, in my opinion. But hopefully transit there is going to be there to take people. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out.
Yeah. And I, you know, to your point of why is this, you know, I think two things. I think what we've seen on a polarization side of things, geographically speaking, is that, you know, the largest and the predominant, you know, share of transit ridership is just entirely represented by Democrats. And, you know, you don't have as many, you know, the Peter Kings and some of the more moderates. And then on top of that, I think, which, and again, it's not to say that rural transit is essential. It's just from a visibility and kind of vote share, it's a kind of underrepresented. And then I think, you know, in general, just everything has become hyper partisan. And that is not a indictment of only one party. And I think it's been interesting hearing the president-elect, you know, almost on, you know, himself, and just because it's not every, you know, there is this was a tough 4 years that has really amped up the volume. And I think his effort to, on both sides, tone it down, I think will be incredibly helpful to conversations like transit, like that this is a thing that is good for everyone, for us as a country. And just because it is not, you know, this funding goes to blue districts, does not mean that this is a partisan issue. And I think going in our favor is just because, you know, it's already, let's start talking 2022. If you look at the Senate map of who is up on the Republican side, you have the Portmans of Ohio. You have, there's a Toomey in Pennsylvania who is not running for reelection, but is, you know, representing Philadelphia, and SEPTA in Pittsburgh. You know, you have Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, you have Burr in North Carolina. Like, there is a transit constituency in there that I think can get a job done. And it just speaks to the need to, on all sides, tone down the kind of vitriol and let's get back to business.
You know, who might be able to do it? Gritty.
See, Gritty is more the fit. It's the, you know, we've got one hand open and then the other hand has Gritty in it.
I think he might be able to unite us and fix transit. Just throwing it out there. Sorry, Greg Rogers, I cut you off. Go ahead.
I'm not sure that's the messaging campaign for, like, get back on transit. It's gritty.
I mean, who knows what works these days? Just leave it at that.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I was going to say, you know, a lot of people are going to return, for those who are going to return home for Thanksgiving, or for those who are going to be on video calls for Thanksgiving with extended family. It might even be difficult to agree upon whether the sky is blue, but we can all agree that Gritty should be president. I think is our conclusion.
Or at least he's earned a cabinet spot. Yeah. Is all I'm saying. But,
right, right. It'd be great. And speaking of cabinet picks, I for one am thrilled that
the transfer secretary. Do it. No, leak it.
Yeah. This is where we're going to be making news. Look, I'm just excited that Marion Williamson is going to be named head of Department of Energy, Crystals, Meditation, and Mysticism. I can't wait for that. This is the change that I'm here for.
I like it. It's a unity governing party. Mm-hmm. So let's talk. Okay, so say grand ideas of, you know, the Christmas list stimulus is not going to happen. What are some areas of focus that we think the administration can do, you know, finding common ground or through kind of universal action, just, you know, as the executive branch? Greg Rogers, I'm going to kick it to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we're looking at what's going to happen, you know, at the executive level, climate's of course made a huge priority for Biden. You know, I think we've all seen the reporting this week, but especially this week, suggesting that, you know, climate is going to be weaved into all of these discussions and all of these priorities leading in. And the first thing to watch, of course, at DOT is going to be overturning the SAFE rule, not to be confused with my former employer, Securing Workers Future Energy. But
this is CAFE standards.
This was CAFE standards. This was the Trump administration's rulemaking that would lower the targets for miles per gallon for vehicles. Yeah. And so I see that changing. I see the Biden prioritizing overturning that. I believe there's going to be a big focus on electrification, on transit. I think active transportation, as we've discussed, is going to be big. Didn't Biden mention micromobility or scooters during one of the debates?
He did. I actually saw in one of the kind of micromobility, you know, newsletter type things, they said, is this the first micromobility president? And I don't think we're going to. I mean, by mentioning it, he is the most micromobility president, I would say. But actually, and one your point on, you know, redoing a rulemaking, another really big change in kind of people's plans and all of that, but with the Democrats not taking the Senate, is that takes the Congressional Review Act off the table, which means every rulemaking that, you know, there had been a kind of it's almost like a baseball Super 2 thing where the June-ish, July-ish on, the assumption was if Democrats took the White House and the Senate, you could just kind of do a congressional review on that and just stop it. That's off the table, which means that this is going to be, I feel bad, or I guess obviously this is kind of what you love, but the EPA folks are going to be very busy. Mm-hmm. You know, at DOT, you have the CAFE standards, you have, you know, there was a lot, the NEPA changes that were just done. There's, you know, and the difference when it's not through the CRA, you know, and through Congress, is that it is just a slog of a process, and it is, you know, procedure heavy. So you're going to see that is going to be a lot of that work of, you know, as much of what Trump's focus early on was undoing the Obama kind of priorities. You're going to have redoing the Obama priorities by undoing the Trump stuff. So it's going to be a lot of public comments.
Yeah, I think that's right. And look, at the same time, they're also going to prepare for the next rewrite of CAFE standards. I think that starts in model year 2026, 2027, if I remember correctly. So that's coming up as well, too. So they're going to be real busy in that sort of world. I think it's going to take up a good amount of time.
Yeah. And then I would say, you know, on the electrification front, and for DOT, electrification of transit is going to be huge. From my time there, when it was like, all right, we want to really go big on this, I remember being shocked at the time how little of the vehicle electrification and all of that stuff actually takes place at DOT. I think the Department of Energy is going to be a very important player, and as they have been, on the broader adoption, the research and development on battery tech and all that, but just and incentives and different things like that. Whereas with DOT, the electrification of transit, which is huge, is going to be a big function. And then beyond that, there's charging infrastructure and such. But again, DOE's got a lot there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look back, 12 years ago, when Obama and Biden took office, DOE received a lot of funding that helped to jumpstart the electric vehicle industry in the U.S. You know, we had the Advanced Technology Vehicle Manufacturing Loan Guarantee Program that helped Tesla to get a start, that helped GM to build electric vehicles and hybrids, and it helped Nissan as well.
And yet, at the time, was known solely as the Solyndra, if I correct? Or was separate?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what happened, you know, a few years later, there was a Solyndra controversy, but loan guarantee programs in general were a really, really successful way that we funded new innovations in transportation and battery storage and energy storage, things like that. And it is kind of a shame because the federal government made its money back on those types of programs.
Well, I was gonna say, it's actually a great example. Like when you get to do it 8 years later again, to be like, hey, instead of doing that same, let's try to cherry pick, let's think about how much money we've made back as a country just on kind of Tesla, you know, capital gains taxes alone. That these programs do work.
Yeah, they do. And I mean, no, it's undeniable. If we're looking for market-based solutions, it's things like that. You know, one thing I would also look towards as well, this is an industry movement, but, you know, this might be a movement in Congress too, is looking at how to electrify freight. You know, trucks account for 5% of vehicles on the road, but 25% of fuel consumed and emissions, approximately. If we want to achieve really meaningful gains reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, we have to be looking at the entire transportation sector. It's not just changing people's personal commutes. It's changing how we get the things that we need.
Yeah, and your points around DOE. Right now, they have the Connected Communities Grant out, which is a pretty big grant has been coming out yearly, I think. And, you know, to your point, Pete, around charging infrastructure, you know, they're encouraging partnerships between developers, campuses, hospitals. I think it's very, very interesting to track the land use component of all this, and just thinking about, so, you know, how do we put the right foundations in place on the land use side, the zoning side, to kind of set the stage for more charging infrastructure to be installed. It's a great conversation that's going on right now, and start to see more collaboration with the energy providers as well. I think back to, you know, our friends from Proterra that were on the podcast a few episodes ago, and when we were going through the California blackouts and just thinking about, you know, could electric bus be actually a power generator in the time of an emergency? So I think that conversation is going to be really interesting. And then, I mean, when you ask for a wish list program, I mean, I always think about how successful transit-oriented development has been. I feel like we need another program like that takes us kind of to the next level around transportation or mobility, if you will. Maybe build off some of the great things going on, you know, with the MOD sandbox or something like that. I think that's kind of what our industry needs, is another program to kind of bring all this together and connect it to housing as well, which would be great. And then I'm curious to see how this administration navigates a complicated issue like the future of work. When you think about, you know, Prop 22 in California, the gig economy, and how does that put a strain on our traditional sense of community? If people are a part of the gig economy, they're transient. So does that lead to less home ownership and, you know, less stability for communities? People can pick up and move as companies move. So I think that's going to be an interesting area or policy issue to watch for this administration.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty obvious to say that one of the groups that will have what I think probably the largest swing in influence from the Trump administration is what is going to be labor. And with, you know, without, with the divided, you know, the kind of the legislative big items off the table for now, at least, that's going to mean the executive branch is going to be a area where that significant influence is exerted. So, you know, kind of how do we, you know, because I think Biden's President-elect Biden, I think when you look at their plans, they've actually done a really great job of that. It is about, you know, investing in building the infrastructure and industries of the future, while but doing it, you know, with good paying jobs and doing the training so that we're we are preparing the American workforce, you know, and not just in a handful of communities, but just more broadly of how do we actually prepare ourselves and, you know, beyond tell everyone to go code. Like there's going to be a lot of, you know, an electrified vehicle, you know, fleet is going to require new skills. And so like, how are we preparing that? I think it's going to be really essential. I think these next 4 to 8 years are a really critical time for doing, you know, for that push, you know, as, just as they are for the kind of fleet deployment and rollout.
Yeah, I think that next year is really, and really this administration, this next administration, I think is really going to be defined by intersectionality. You know, it feels
like... Whoa, is that a word?
Yeah, intersectionality, yeah.
I'm going to look it up in a Scrabble dictionary right now.
Yeah. You know, a lot of fields are coming together, I think, in a lot of our consciousness. You know, Greg, you brought up the tie-ins of transportation, housing, equity, you know, labor, future of work. We're really going to be taking, I think, a wider range view of a lot of these issues, you know, in working with, you know, the next administration and in this Congress. And I think that's exciting. I think that, you know, the transportation sector obviously has always you know, intersected, so to speak, with other fields. But I think that we're really seeing more attention being put towards how we're approaching land use. I mean, look at Transportation for America's report earlier this year on how we have to be focused on land use and not just transportation itself. And, you know, Greg, you handled this with MOD and transit-oriented development. I think that's one area where I'm really interested to watch how those discussions develop. You know, traditionally those have been local, county, regional sort of discussions, but we might see those become elevated.
But I think that's right. And the reason though that there's still federal influence, and Pete, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's still, a lot of it's still tied to federal transportation dollars. And so I think, again, that's kind of the catalyst where maybe some change can start in our thinking, but with some sort of new programs. I mean, the thing I find fascinating is like the way we do traffic counts, not to get granular, but
no,
let's dive in.
I mean, we still throw out a rubber hose and, you know, count how many people go down a corridor.
No, we count how many cars go down a corridor.
Right. Yeah. Now, not even people. You're right. Thank you.
I wish we were counting the number of people.
Yeah.
Right.
We almost exactly are. Is the problem? No. But it's usually one person per car too.
So, I mean, even like, how do we start to evolve around something around that and start to leverage, you know, the access we have to anonymous, you know, geolocation information, things like that, to just get more accurate counts that hopefully leads to more accurate planning. That, you know, that data hopefully provides the justifications to give the political will to make these more difficult decisions. It's just, there's so much to be thinking about. And I feel like sometimes we jump to deploying X versus thinking about, okay, are there other ways to incentivize better decisions?
I will give a shout out to Chairman DeFazio and to the House HR2, the Invest in America Act, the House long-term reauthorization bill that was moved. That bill, you know, there was lots more funding across the board, a real focus on this, but the kind of more in the weeds changes that were made into, you know, things like incorporating climate, you know, emissions and climate change impacts into, you know, your environmental reviews and assessments and kind of cost benefit analysis. And similarly,
the funny thing is, you would think that would be standard in an environmental review.
No. If you remove a lane, that means there will be more idling and therefore worse for the environment. And it's like, okay, even if it's for a bike lane. But anyway, but so they did a lot on that. They also did a lot on you know, like requiring that, like, you first have to show that you are done maintaining what you have, and that you've assessed all different options before you just build another 2 to 3 lanes to, you know, because induced demand doesn't exist. And so just little, what seem like little changes like that have, I think, just really outsized potential for actual change. There's obviously that there was a much more bipartisan vote and kind of procedure on the Senate side. They were doing the highway title only, so I will say, so they haven't, you know, hadn't got into some of the transit stuff, but I would urge that does not mean that we should write off from a policy perspective that things that weren't in the House bill shouldn't be reconsidered as we approach this again, because a lot's changed since the Senate bill was passed.
July 2019 Senate bill.
Yeah. So a lot has changed, not, you know, ignoring the election, just in how people are really thinking about things and whether we go for it. So, but Greg, it's a great point that these are major changes. And then the other thing I'll say is, from the executive side, that, you know, what we called Tiger, what has been the build grants for the Trump administration, there's a lot of discretion and a lot of ability to drive, not just with the ones that you're funding, but over the course of year by year applications, when, you know, those programs are always wildly oversubscribed, and by nudging, you know, by what you fund, do it, you know, pushing people to consider equity, to show us that these are complete streets and multimodal approaches, and that how does this impact land use? By doing that, everyone has to, you know, begins to start adjusting their projects and their planning and their programs in order to make it more competitive to try to win the next round. And so we saw that with Tiger a lot, that, like, just by getting people to think outside of the what had been the traditional, you know, here's my STP funds and I can do this, and this is a highway project, and over here I can do a bike ped. You know, having the whole complete project was ironically a somewhat new concept for federal funding. And I think that really does have the ability to change how state and local governments and DOTs approach these things. So I think what was done for sustainability and livable communities in Tiger in the Obama years, you know, I think we have a real opportunity to do not just on climate, but also on equity and the broader kind of land use.
I think that's right. And, you know, it's and it's not always about money either, right? You know, I think back to September 2016. There was an event that Fox had pulled together at DOT. It's called Safer People, Safer Streets. That was the first time I saw Pete Buttigieg speak, now known as Slayer Pete.
He was 6 at the time.
But so was I. I believe around the same age.
Oh God, they don't pick him.
But you know, this event had brought people, had brought city leaders in from across the U.S. Who were Republicans, Democrats, all kinds of places, who had just focused on bike and pedestrian safety and livable communities. I mean, there's a lot that you can do at DOT just to elevate conversations around this stuff. And, you know, I mean, USDOT did a National Pedestrian Safety Month last month, which was a big step too. I mean, there's a lot that you can do within your, to sort of promote these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for Secretary LaHood, the distracted driving thing, you know, that was not really a on people's radar. It was not a key safety issue. And I'm not sure how much actual, like, major funding or whether, other than driving, you know, just using that bully pulpit, using, you know, you have the research tools where you can provide the data, you can, you know, just elevating that issue is really powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and Secretary Fox did it as well, elevating issues about, you know, the kind of
matters opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. But it, within that, more the historical, you know, that highway that that plowed through that neighborhood, and then, you know, the term, you know, on the wrong side of the tracks is literally comes from, you know, segregation and inequitable transportation planning and policies, and like driving that home is very important. You know, is it does change the needle. So I do think that I will say I want to make sure that that we're not. I actually was more as a Democrat, you know, was pleasantly surprised on a lot of fronts with this DOT in things in our front. And one thing I want to give them a real shout out for, and that I really, really hope and will urge those, anyone listening who is, goes, you know, goes into the Biden administration, and particularly at DOT, to keep up and to just, you know, continue to put the pedal to the metal on, is push on accessibility. And in particular, as it relates to autonomous vehicles, you know, they have they this inclusive design challenge, just the bringing together of stakeholders. They have had a number of different initiatives, and that is, you know, I really that is a very federal role in driving that that research and technology and the you know, inclusiveness and providing that accessible future for all. So I want to give a big kudos to, you know, to Finch Fulton, to Sophia Gallo, to Lindsay Teal, and to everyone, and to Secretary Chao, that is something that they, you know, Finch had talked about it when he was on the podcast, and that they really did deliver on.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, as we talked about before we started this episode, you know, we're a policy podcast, not a politics podcast. And I think that there's been a lot of great things that have happened at USDOT over this tenure. And I think that Finch has been a fantastic leader on a lot of these issues around accessibility and AVs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we have to acknowledge, you know, it's more than just surface transportation, too. I mean, you know, UAS has made advancements, regulations have been put in place, pilot programs have been launched, literally launched. So, look at the exciting thing with SpaceX, even though that isn't, you know, USDOT per se and the FAA, but, you know, they're starting to think about things like commercial space travel, like, you know, it's more than just the microcosm sometimes that we're in. And I think it's really interesting. And, you know, shout out to the UAS show during Biden's, you know, acceptance speech. that was pretty great. I mean, it's pretty fun to watch. And UAS, you know, move some letters around USA. So another great acronym by the federal government, right?
Well, and I'll say, I mean, we started to catch it a little bit at the very, very end of the Obama-Biden administration. But that what the Trump administration, you know, from a DOT and transportation perspective, they were thrust right into, you know, 4 years of just nonstop innovation and just technological change and new thing. And then one thing disappears and then a new thing comes, and like, and trying to keep up as a federal entity, they did a really good, about as good a job as you can expect, you know, to move a tanker that is the federal government. And I think they did an amazing job on that. And also there was a lot of work, when Finch was, again, he was on, and he was talking about the kind of cross agency initiative to just line up what everything that is being worked on for basically the connected, automated, shared electric. That is work that I, you know, that's where this transition comes in huge of like, that's where you pick up and that you do not having to redo that from scratch, really puts you, it's a lot of work, and it helps position the next administration. So, you know, they've done a very good job, I think, in trying to lay groundwork for how do you just get, you know, somebody shows up at your door with like literally a time machine, and it's like, how are you regulating this? Is this a airplane or is this a motorcycle? And you're like, it's a time machine. What are we, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, that's not easy. So I think they've done a really good job on like creating framework for new.
Yeah, I mean, when you think back on, you know, where we were 4 years ago with AVs, it was a lot of promise and not a lot of rubber on the road. And today, there are a lot of vehicles on the road. I think we've made a lot of progress in figuring out what questions need to be answered in terms of AV regulations, creating standards, updating regulations. And I think that that's going to be a really exciting thing to see is how that gets carried forward with this next administration. There's a lot of just incredible technical work that's happened over the past 4 years. And it's involved a lot of stakeholders. It's involved nonprofits and industry. And I think that we're really well positioned to take advantage of a lot of these great new technologies heading into, the future.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, go ahead, Greg.
I think this is a nice way to kind of close things out. But I wanted to ask us all a question. So as we were talking right now, there's so many great ideas out there. USDOT does have this opportunity to be a coordinator, if you will, or collect all the information and then hopefully disseminate it through best practices, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, when we post this episode, should we, one, I'm going to ask you two, what do you think the next smart cities challenge type thing should be? Because I think there's a huge opportunity with those programs. I mean, people will question whether or not awarding all the funding to one city was a good idea or not, but so many cities created plans around smart cities and they're working to implement them right now. So it's this incentivizer to create a plan, to create a vision, which is the hardest thing to do sometimes, but it provides a starting point. Yeah. So what, you know, I feel like there's this opportunity because there's going to be money. I hate to say it this way. There's going to be money thrown at things to try and get out of COVID. And it's just necessary. Yeah. Whether or not it's smart fiscally or not, who knows? We just need to do it though, because the country's struggling. So if we are going to put money towards things, what should be the next challenge that, you know, we put out there to communities and hopefully provide some funding to help them write their proposals? But you know, what do we think it should be? Like what should be the focus? Is it resiliency? Is it infrastructure? Is it connected communities? I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas, but I think it'd be interesting to put into our, you know, post to say, what do people think? I'd love to hear what our listeners think, because there's smarter people than me out there. And I want to learn from others as well.
I will say, this is Pete. I would say that what's going to be interesting is that this is not 2009. This is not that great recession. This is a weird, like, virus driven, but like, in for a large part, man made thing. And so it'll be interesting to see what the economy looks like on the back end. What I think the driving force and where we do that, you know, what's the next insert this city challenge? What COVID showed us is from an equitable mobility, the two worlds that everyone lives in. And I think that the how do you build back better is not just, you know, nailing rail stakes into the ground and doing the transcontinental railroad, though obviously high speed rail is great. It is the okay, hold it, like, were we serving all communities? And not just like you've got, you know, the thought that you're within X distance of a bus stop does not mean that you are being served by transit. And so how do we start reapproaching that so that we are providing good, you know, reliable, convenient, safe, you know, environmentally sustainable and equitable transit to all communities? I think that would be a great way to rebuild communities, rebuild not just jobs through the investment, but access to jobs and services and healthcare and all the other things that a lot of us, you know, that we talked a lot about in that interview with Henry, that was, you know, that were really thrown in our face that we should have seen decades ago. But that's, I would say that's where, you know, equitable mobility is, I think, would be a great challenge.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that we need to remember a lot of the lessons that we've learned this year and bring them forward. And, you know, as I said earlier, we should be making decisions based not on, you know, vehicle throughput, but upon a wide range of factors that matter. This is greenhouse gas emissions. This is equity. This is access and accessibility. I think these are all big questions that we should be trying to answer. One thing that I really liked that that DOE put out last year was called the Mobility Energy Productivity metric for deciding on transportation projects. If we tweak that a little bit, so what it does is it looks at cost, energy, and time when you're looking at a project. If we tweak that a little bit, if we look at, you know, if we look at equity and if we look at accessibility, we plug those kinds of things in, that's what a smart, you know, transportation decision-making framework would look like. So it's that kind of thing that I would love to see at the next DOT.
Yeah, no, maybe it's I was just jotting down ideas. Maybe it's like a healthy communities challenge, because I think everything that you just described, like it's more than just mobility. Like mobility is this, I think that we all have come to believe is this foundation towards livability and happiness and everything you just said, Pete, you know, connection to jobs, healthcare, healthy foods. I mean, that's what, you know, we're seeing a lot in the work that we're doing, and it's how it's similar to what Secretary Fox was talking about, ladders of opportunity. How do we use mobility as a connector and to overcome divisions and gaps that exist within the existing transportation system? So, yeah, no, I appreciate this discussion. I think it's important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that our kind of climate policy doesn't coming out of this is not just a bunch of EV chargers. That is part of a much larger package. And again, transit being at the heart of it. And I would really urge Congress to think about what our, you know, not just our major cities, but like, because those are going to get hurt. And the cuts that are going to come with this are going to immediately impact those that are most dependent on transit and those hurting the most already. So that, again, just one last plug for state, local, and transit relief.
Right. Well, cool, guys. This was fun. We walked through a lot of stuff. Should we share our social media our tags? Greg Rodriguez.
I'll go first. Sure. At Smarter Transpo on Twitter, and then, of course, LinkedIn under my name, I hope.
And this is Pete. I'm at Pete_Gould or at Catapult Policy.
And Greg Rogers, as always, at AV Gregar.
Oh, and actually, one last plug. If you're passionate about transportation and public service, I encourage you to do your best to try to join the administration and be part of the solutions. You know, it is really fulfilling work. It is hard work, but it is really, you know, we are only as good as the people, you know, as we're finding out in other areas, we are only as good as the people that go in and commit themselves to this. So I would strongly encourage folks to, you know, this is a time that we really do need public service.
Amen.
All right, guys, thank you so much. And we look forward to, we would love online, please, you know, hit us up on Twitter. We would love to hear what you'd like the DOT challenge to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear it. Maybe we can even start some quizzes. We'll start some polls.
I like it.
Well, cool. Hang in there, everyone.
Thanks, guys. And wear a mask.
Wear a mask.
Stay safe, everyone. Stay well. Thank you.